Hello. Welcome to Release Your Wings. I'm Dan Bagley, and today I'm interviewing Gayatri, who has been a BK since the mid-70s and has some wonderful thoughts on peace and how we get better at it. So welcome.
Thank you.
First of all, we're talking, the title is Peace by Peace. So when we say peace, what are we really talking about? Is it just absence of war or absence of conflict, or is it a deeper meaning?
Well, when you say peace, I'm thinking, what peace are you talking about? A little piece of something?
Yes.
Or peace.
P-E-A-C-E, peace.
Yes. Why I ask that, because what we're talking about is peace has been suppressed because of violence. And I think an absence of nonviolence is what happened in the world, and so peace was then forgotten by human beings because of their violent nature. So I think peace is connected very much to nonviolence. So there's a saying that if your swadharm, if the religion of the self is nonviolent, then there will be peace.
I think that's good, because basically some people are like fights not happening yet, that their violent nature is just under the surface.
That's right.
And that's almost, to me, that's never peace. That is disguised anger, when somebody is like a cauldron boiling and they haven't done anything violent. So, you know, within the peace. But I know you're about to head to South America pretty soon, and you'll be in conferences of climate change. Now, I know people feel very strongly about such things as climate change on both sides. Do you ever feel that there's some comfort to add to those people that feel they must get angry to help get their ideas across?
Well, you see, climate change has reached a point in the world that people are getting angry, not because things are getting worse and it's affecting their lives and affecting their lifestyle and affecting opportunities in the world. It's affecting development. It's affecting everything from personal health to sustainable development in the world. But I think what people are getting angry about is that everything is out there on the table. Everybody knows what the issues are. Everybody, the experts, also know what it is they have to do. But the anger is coming from the people as a reaction when they observe that people who know what they have to do and are in positions to do it is spending time creating reasons and excuses of not to do what they know they have to do.
So does their anger at that make it easier or more difficult to come to agreement?
It makes it complex. It makes it complex because they're at a point, I feel, in which they're saying, well, what do we do? Do we walk away from it and accept what's happening in climate change as something that will cause annihilation, that will cause, you know, destruction of some sort to our world as we know it, to our home planet? Do I keep advocating for that which I know the stakeholders and the leaders and the decision makers have got to listen? Do I keep talking and talking and talking until one day they get it? So they are in a paradox, I think. And so some are moving toward more spiritual ways of dealing with the issue of climate change. And some are saying, you know, we're going to continue advocating, and until we die, we're not going to give up to this. But I wonder which is better, someone who is turning toward a spiritual kind of a way of understanding meaning and purpose to the climate change situation in the world, or those who says we will die, but we will not stop talking about it. We will get angry, but we will not stop talking about it. I wonder what happens to them. I mean, are they going to be effective? What is going to happen? So I'm going to Peru. Uh-huh. I'm going to Lima in December, and I'm going with this paradox in my own mind in terms of how can we approach climate change more from a domain of understanding the power of peace, mm-hmm. and understanding the power of acceptance, maybe with the serenity prayer.
Maybe.
You know,
yeah.
Maybe I'm going with that. But at the same time, not to accept defeat.
I think about Gandhi as an analog to this, mm-hmm. and he really took a position from the peace that I will be who I am, and I want the British to leave, but I want them to leave as friends, mm-hmm. and that belief that it could be people could be mobilized, and this was not just I'm going to sit by myself. This was mobilization, of course, but it feels to me that the anger that we experience will often shut the opposition down in terms of being quiet and then just wait for their turn to be angry. I watch this going back and forth. I mean, mm-hmm. all over the world we can find two sides blaming the others. Mm-hmm. So I'm hoping you come back with an answer, say, I got centered and I found agreement that was not there before through this more heart-based.
I don't know if I'm going there to come away with just an agreement. I've been to too many UN conferences for that to be a real kind of inspirational piece for me. But I'm going there to really look for and connect to people who are working from an inner domain.
Yes.
People who are seeing that ultimately we are talking about Mother Nature. We're talking about an entity in its own right that we may refer to as the environment or to Mother Nature or to the home planet. And to know that regardless of what human beings decide to or not to do, this here is an entity that's yes. working with its own energy, as it were. And how do we connect to that energy? How does peace in my mind mm-hmm. connect to the peace in matter? Yes. How can we reestablish that relationship of respect, of regard, and of harmony with the environment and with Mother Nature? And to see if through the development of whether you do it through prayer, whether you do it through contemplation, whether you do it through meditation, but to really establish that fundamental relationship that a human soul has with the environment, I think that would be crucial for me to observe. And I say that because we have been experimenting with something that's called yogic agriculture.
Mm-hmm.
And we have farmers sitting in peaceful meditation before they till their soil. So what they do, rather than get the artificial fertilizers to fertilize the soil, mm-hmm. soil, what they do is to sit, and with the power of the mind, a peaceful mind, they radiate those vibrations within the soil itself. And then they start using other organic means to fertilize the soil. So in that way, they're building a relationship with the earth in that way as farmers. And then they're planting their crops. And they have been seeing a lot of results that's been coming from the quality of the crops, from the amount that they get, the volume of the crops, of the fruits and of the vegetables that they've been getting, and also how they themselves, because they're able to do that, their well-being of themselves, the well-being of their families, and the well-being of the community, because it brings them together in a peaceful action contributing to an outcome that they all will enjoy and they will all, you know, get benefit from.
Where in the world is this going on?
This is happening in India, mm-hmm. and it's happening within the Gujarat region, one area of it, and it's being tracked scientifically by some of the universities.
I like that.
In India. So I would like to see more of this. I would like to see people connecting to solar energy. Mm-hmm. Not just as a renewable right. source of energy, but their connection with the sun.
Yes.
You know, the qualities of the sun. And yeah. so that is what I would like to come away from Peru with. Is there a shift in consciousness in relation to climate change? Can the people say, you know, enough is enough, we're going to take it in our hands, and we're going to do these little piece by piece actions so that we can reestablish something new that would maybe bring about a different outcome.
So I know you'll be in South Africa on the Peru side. Have you had any interaction with the indigenous Amazon people? I mean, they live as close to nature, though they're not particularly farmers as such.
I haven't had it in Lima, Peru, even though I was there earlier this year in April, and I did go to Cusco, and I did go to Machu Picchu, and I did meet with some of the indigenous people, but never on the subject of climate change.
Yeah.
But I do know that I am scheduled to be on certain workshops and panels, and one in particular with the indigenous representatives.
The from the other side of the continent, going up the Amazon, and meeting people that were living way far beyond, 1,000 miles beyond Manaus and farther up Rio Negro area, I was struck by one guide we had been raised in that, and going through the medicinal medicines that they used, how they, you know, got the animals, or the beetles and the ants out of the trees to put on them for certain types of problems and all. And I was struck by how close to nature the tribal thing was, though it is losing ground, of course, to deforestation and the like. But there is something in that of coming from the heart and attaching it to the head.
That's right.
To say this is what's working. By the way, the viewers of this may not be aware, Gayatri is with the United Nations, does a lot of work with the United Nations, thus her references to these things. She lives in New York, and we're lucky to have her as we're taping here in Tampa.
Yes, I'm the Brahma Kumari's representative to the United Nations, and I've been that since the 80s, and so I've been through a lot of UN conferences.
You've sat in many meetings, I'm sure.
Yes, I have, and I've learned a lot. I mean, I've learned a lot from being at the UN, and the UN may be many things, but one of the things the UN is, it brings all the facts and figures to the table. And so when, after you finish with the UN, one of those meetings, you leave it saying, well, I know everything, but what do I do with what I know? That's the big question. But coming back to the indigenous people,
yes.
I feel that we talk about closeness to the earth, and I feel that that closeness, it just doesn't happen in that sense. It's that you really have to live in conditions and in circumstances where it really gives you that sense of reality of this is what happens. What wakes me up in the morning? Is it my alarm clock or is it the chirping of the birds?
Yes.
You know, that's how the indigenous people, that's people who are close to the land, that's how they live. Do I go to the supermarket and buy my vegetables or did I help my grandmother plant them in the backyard so that I have a relationship with that, you know, vegetable I'm about to eat? So I think it's not this a lot of lip service because we live in such artificial environments that we've forgotten how the real environment works, and we need to get back to understanding that and being with it. Understanding isn't a theoretical thing, but it has to be dirtying our fingers, walking in the mud, feeling the rain on my body, the things that the indigenous.
Well, what I'm hearing you say is we've come full circle now to piece by piece is part of the piece is getting in rhythm with the nature of appreciating it and feeling it and getting into the texture of it, not just arm's length with nature.
Right. You know, I'm also going to Peru, to Lima, with this paradox of dharma and bhavana. Dharma is called principles, mm-hmm. right? So it's the principles that you live by. And we have a lot of that. Here are all the principles of the earth. Here are the principles of economics. Here are the principles of climate change. Here are the principles of renewable energies. But what is lacking is the bhavana, and the bhavana is the heart. And I feel we as a human race, our heart has been broken in many pieces. That's how I started. Which piece are we talking about?
Right.
And the and if Mother Earth has a heart, that has been broken into many pieces. So in as much as we know the Dharma and we know the principles, that is not going to help us. What we need is to bring back the pieces of our hearts together. Uh-huh. Because when the pieces of the hearts are peacefully put back together, then what emerges from this fullness, this whole heart, is something that's called bhavana, which are pure feelings. Mm-hmm. And those pure feelings give us the will. It gives us the will to do what we know we have to do, but to do it in a timely manner. And I think it's this full heart, it's bringing all the pieces back into the whole heart, that will allow us to do what we know we have to do. And do it now.
Very nice. Thank you, sister.
You're welcome.
And thank you for joining us. Goodbye.